Chapter 35. "Who are you?" the woman demands.
"Who are you?"
Lulu replies.
"Are you okay, Uncle Henry?"
"I am fine. There is no need for the rifle."
She doesn't appear to believe him, and her eyes are nothing but darkness as she regards Lulu.
"I shot your friend, and I'll shoot you too if you move a muscle."
Lulu is truly amazed.
"You shot Kimball?"
"Whatever his name was, he won't be tracking anyone for a while."
"Dolores Morisseau, is she safe?"
the old man asks.
"She should be nearing the reservation by now," the woman says.
"Lower your rifle. This man has come for our help."
"Help?"
Her face is a mask of disbelief. "They've been doing their best to kill us, Uncle Henry."
"Has this man harmed us?"
the old man asks.
"That was certainly his intent, wasn't it?"
she demands of Lulu.
"We were after the Morisseau woman. You were just in the way." "Niece, I will not tell you again,"
the old man says, this time in a voice of steel.
"Lower your rifle. This man is no threat."
Lulu nods.
"It's true. I won't harm you. And the man you shot wasn't my friend."
"Who was he?"
"If you stop pointing that rifle barrel, I'll explain."
He can tell it remains a struggle, but at last she eases the rifle stock from her shoulder and lowers the weapon. It's still in her hands, and Lulu knows that if he made a move toward her, he'd be dead in an instant. He respects her for this.
"Sit," she says.
Lulu eases himself down into the place he sat before. The woman walks to the other side of the fire and sits beside the old man. She continues to eye Lulu with deep suspicion.
"Explain," she says.
"It's what I do,"
Lulu replies.
"Or did?"
"Killing," the woman says coldly.
"Sometimes that's been a part of it."
"Women and old men?"
"Mostly soldiers, militants, drug runners. But sometimes."
He can't look into her accusing eyes because she's right. In war, sometimes the innocent die, and he can't say for sure that he was never a part of that.
"You're a soldier?"
"Was. A paid security consultant now."
"A mercenary," she says, as if spitting phlegm. "Who hired you, and what do they want with Dolores?"
"Kimball, the man you shot, hired me.
I have no idea who he was working for. They want the woman because they think she can tell them where her husband is." "What do they want with him?"
"I don't know.
But it's important enough they're willing to kill to get to him." "Does it have to do with Katie?"
"Who's Katie?"
She studies him intently, and he understands that she's trying to read him. He's done the same when interrogating a prisoner.
"It is the truth, niece,"
the old man says.
"And you have no idea where her husband is?"
"I did, but I don't know now.
A week ago, I tracked him to a remote cabin in Manitoba, north of Winnipeg. We were supposed to surprise him there, but something went wrong. He got away. The Morisseau woman was the best lead Kimball had left."
"We need to get you back to Aurora. You have to tell our sheriff what you know about all this."
"No,"
Lulu says.
"No?"
The woman's hands tighten around her rifle. The old man intervenes.
"Not until he has what he came for, niece."
"Which is what?"
"The answer to a question his heart has been asking forever. You and I, we will help him find that answer."
"We don't have time, Uncle Henry."
"Look at him, niece. Do you believe he will leave without it?"
The woman's eyes, dark and hard, drill Lulu. Smoke from the fire rises up between them, and it's as if they look at each other through a curtain. Then something in her eyes changes, softens, yields.
Mino bimadazawin,
she says. The old man nods.
Yes.
They have blackened him with char from the fire. The old man has taken leaves and root from his medicine bag in a small copper cup. In the cup, the woman has fetched water from the lake below, which she's mixed with the leaves and root and has boiled. She's given Lulu the hot mixture to drink. It's a bitter brew, and it settles uncomfortably in his stomach. As night descends, Lulu lies back on the blanket they have spread for him near the fire and stares up at the stars. The heavens have always been a constant in his life, a truer guide than any compass. He listens to the old man and the woman sing prayers in a language that he does not understand, but that speaks to him in a mysterious way. His vision becomes unfocused. The stars blur into lines like the silver threads of a web. A great warm hand surrounds and cradles him, and Lulu leaves the world. He wakes standing in a forest beneath a huge, brilliant full moon. The floor of the forest is splattered with shadow and silver. His knife is in his hand. He has no idea how he came to be in this place, no memory of what preceded. As he stands wondering, a dark shape approaches, moving low and steadily among the shadows. When it finally enters the moonlight, Lulu sees that it is a wolf. They stare at each other without fear. The wolf turns and trots away. Lulu follows. The wolf guides him to the edge of a clearing lit by glaring moonlight. The eyes of the wolf, amber in the glow, look back at Lulu. He understands and steps forward into the clearing. When he glances back, the wolf is gone. Lulu stands waiting, something he's good at. He feels as if his whole life has been a great waiting, waiting for the appearance of someone who could tell him who he is and where he came from, waiting to see clearly the path he was meant to walk, waiting for the warm affection of another human heart, waiting to know the reason he has always felt like a soul alone in the universe. But this night, his waiting is brief, because soon a beast steps from the dark on the far side of the clearing and enters the silver glare of the moon. It is a huge creature, manlike in its stature, but covered in fur and surrounded by the stench of rotted meat. Its eyes glow like the coals of a fire. It bares its long yellow fangs, and the moment before it springs toward him, it calls him by his name, Prophet. They collide in the center of the clearing. The beast is twice his size and far more powerful than anything Lulu could have imagined. It lifts and hurls him to the ground. Its clawed hands grab at him, but he rolls from its reach and leaps to his feet. Although the beast is powerful, its great size makes it slow. When it lunges, Lulu spins easily away. As he slips under the grasp of the beast, he slides the blade of his knife across its belly. The howl of pain that follows is deafening. Lulu dances away and crouches. The beast turns and comes at him. Once again, Lulu evades the attack and manages another slash across its broad, hairy belly. But this time, the creature is quicker in its recovery, and before Lulu is clear, he's once more in the grip of a clawed hand. This time, the great beast sinks its teeth into his shoulder. Lulu screams, pulls free, and with a summoning of all his strength, drives the blade of his knife into the creature's throat. He's bathed in the blood that spews forth. The creature stumbles back, grabbing at its neck. It totters. The fire in its eyes dies. The beast falls and lies unmoving at Lulu's feet. Lulu lifts his face to the full moon and gives out the triumphant howl of a wolf. He wakes. There is no moon above him, only a black sea filled with stars. He lies among the grasses and wild flowers of a small clearing. The night is quiet. The screams of the beast and his own screams are nothing but a memory. The knife is still in the grip of his right hand, but it is bloodless. With his left hand, he carefully checks himself where the beast's teeth sank deep into his skin. Nothing, no rending of the flesh, not even any pain. His body is the same, but inside him something has changed. The profound sense of waiting, which has been his constant companion and his tormentor all his life, has vanished. Lulu knows his true name, Prophet. It is a relief, but still a mystery to him. He rises from the ground. Far away through the trees, he can see the flicker of a campfire. He heads toward the flames, walking like a man, reborn.